She's not trying to scare these guys, and she doesn't know why. Why are they running out? She had no clue.
Lighten up.
Right. Well, Kelly tried to have a chat with her, you know. So hopefully, you know, hopefully Kelly has set that one lady straight, you know, on how to deal with our side.
Okay.
But this lady was, you know, scared or not scared. She was just trying to say, hi, how are you doing? You know, here's what happened to me. You know, what's going on? You know, she's just trying to be friendly. But on our side, it comes across as a very evil, you know, something that scares these, you know, businessmen and, you know, who are just out for dinner. So what happens is I think that a lot, because of that experience that I had with Kelly, because she has no reason to make it up. I mean, she's told me things that were absolutely 100% true, that there was no possible way she could know. You know, I hang around with her and I, you know, get this information. I'm like, wow, there's no way you could know that. So I trust her and what she says. And when she comes up with that, I'm like, wow, that totally turned my entire view of paranormal on its ear, because I had figured that entities were either good or bad, and that, you know, some were trying to get a hold of us, and some weren't interested, and some just want to, you know, just run around and play pranks. And yet I run across this one entity where I hear from information that can, you know, that obviously you can't prove this information from Kelly, but I trust it. But I hear this information where she just did not know, the entity did not know that she was coming across the way she was coming across. So I'm wondering.
But you had to see the reaction she was creating.
And
she's the one that was creating it.
And she did not know why they were, according to Kelly, she said that the lady entity did not know why they were running away. Because all she was doing was saying hi. And they would get upset and leave. and she's like, I have, you know, welcome to my, you know, the my place. This is where I am. This is where I exist now. And then most people run away. Why aren't, you know, it's nice to see someone who's not running away. And Kelly had a chat with her, however she does it. And yeah, but that turned me on. At that point, I began to feel sorry for the entities on the other side, and that's, you know, coming back to what I had said. For the very most part, I feel sorry for those who are on the other side that can't communicate. Just like we are trying to communicate with them, with all, this is our hobby, this is our passion, this is what we do. We want to record this. We want to get into it. Some of us, it's our careers, not me personally, but others that I know. And they, you know, we're trying to communicate with them, they're trying to communicate with us, but there's this something in between that's causing it sometimes, at least in that one case, to be misconstrued very, very much. You know, completely opposite of what the entity intended. So
there's another possibility also, though, Doug. One of the things that I've learned over time is that you can have, and I do believe we had at the time, many more than just one entity.
Well,
we had a smorgasbord of, in one sense, of types of energies and different forms of intelligence focused in different ways.
And that's why I'm thinking the Amityville Horror case is of course, much, much different than what I've ever been on.
My belief has always been that whatever was causing the worst stuff, the worst things, was it could have cared less about the effects, had absolutely no moral values like we do. It would not care at all except to be effective. It would, its goal would be to control, and it would do that a number of different ways, but it wouldn't, it would never think that it had something to answer for someplace else. What you've just told me is a story about a men's room where grown men are running out of there absolutely frightened and really believing they were in the presence of evil.
Yes.
And being subjected to severe cold.
Yes.
And a darkening of the room.
Exactly.
Which are indicators of a less than positive course.
Oh, definitely.
When you went to communicate with this, you used a woman. This phenomenon was directed at men. and the answers you got were from one woman to another.
Mm-hmm.
So it may very well be that you only partially found out what was really going on there.
And that's yet another, you know, wall that's very difficult to get over in this particular field that we've chosen to be our hobby and our passion, is that communication is not ever guaranteed, and when it is there, it's not guaranteed to be accurate, you know. So, but it did cause me that the thing about the moral of that story for me anyway is.
And I don't mean to correct you. Please don't take it that way.
No,
that's the way I kind of look at some of this stuff. Is that?
And I completely understand.
The absence of God's presence is truly confusion.
Mm-hmm.
The absence of some kind of positive force, some kind of positive intent, is confusion. And confusion is created a lot of different ways. Those men were not confused when they left. They absolutely wanted out of there. They knew that they needed to leave.
To the embarrassment of their, you know, wives.
Could have cared
comforts.
Less about the reactions or anything
right.
from their family or in public. They were gone.
Right. That's exactly
and that's
it.
Not a, that, to me, doesn't strike me as a discarnate entity that formerly had a body that is focused here now trying to communicate. Those
mm-hmm.
are not, that's not the same kind of phenomena that I've experienced or seen from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I do understand what you mean when you say we misinterpret, because it is so easy to.
Mm-hmm.
We have such a definite limited understanding of this stuff. We have such definite ideas of I know for myself that this stuff doesn't exist. You know, just, it can't. You know, I've never seen it, so how can it? And we have these attitudes, and that confusion is what really wreaks havoc with us, because when the confusion is created, when we're experiencing this as a family in the Amityville house, and we find ourselves, when we look back at it, we find ourselves experiencing so much time there separately, off doing our own things as individuals, not sitting down and sharing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand a lot of it, and a lot of it isn't in-your-face stuff. So it happens individually. Kathy's at home alone when she's embraced from behind by what she perceives to be a woman. I hear the marching band, for example, or the cold spots that we talked about last time.
Right.
Or the odors, the odors in the basement that come and go from a place where there are no sewer pipes. The flies in the sewing room window that just, you kill them and they'd come back in the middle of the winter, which made no sense. The priest testifying years later that he heard a voice tell him to get out, a discarnate voice, the priest that came to bless the house, and the problems that he had in the rectory afterwards, and that some of us experienced for years after that. The list kind of goes on and on and on, but it doesn't mean that all of that came from one source or one thing, and we are so quick to, and I did this for years, please don't think that I'm immune to this, we look for quick, easy answers. We look for a way to understand and deal with this stuff, and I do believe it's a lifetime of interest and study, if you care about it or if you really have a need to know for some reason, to begin to get some perspectives about how some of this works.
Well, it would take that, because especially in Amityville Horror, what you went through, it has so many different facets to it that I have to agree that it's got to be from more than one source. More than one paranormal source, because there's like too many things that they go through, just even in the original movie and in the book, in the histories on, you know, AmityvilleHorror.com. It's just like too many identifiable, like, wow, that's paranormal. It's too much to be all
after
from like
left,
one
after
thing.
After we left the house and we moved into Kathy's mom's house, and we left all our stuff in the house and we moved over there. Kathy and I, one morning, levitated. We were actually floating around the room talking to each other, asking each other if we believed that this was going on. And it was pleasant. It was certainly not normal. And we were asked about this in the polygraph test years later. This was a completely different phenomena than we had experienced in the house. And what do you attribute this to? What do you, you know, I can come up with all kinds of reasons such a thing might occur today, but at the time I had no basis to even begin to form an opinion other than blame it on the house, which is...
And of course, you're like so anti that house at this point, because it's basically evicted you. You know, it's like evicted you and you got out, and now more stuff is happening. So that even had to add confusion.
Well, you need to understand that I still considered that we were going to move back in that house. That was my house. That's where our stuff was. There was no way we were giving it up. We just wanted to get it fixed. So we needed to put together people that could deal with that and do something about that. And... That's a process of learning and unlearning all the things that you think you know and understand or believe are proper, or you start to learn how unpowerful you really are as an individual and how much help you need.
Do you think the right team was put together? That's a question actually that I had from when we were talking last week, because I had mentioned there's a bit of synchronicity that Hans Holzer couldn't be there, and it was the, you know, it was Ed and Lorraine, and so there's a bit of synchronicity, I think, that was at work there. Do you think it was the right team at the right
time?
That's
the first time anybody's ever asked me that question. Good question.
Uh-oh. Blindside
you. I guess I've thought about this from a philosophical point of view in that, you know, all things happen for a reason, and this came together the way it did for whatever reasons. It was the best we could do.
Right.
I don't know, even thinking back now, what we could have done different to put together a more qualified team in terms of people with credentials or what we thought were real credentials.
Right. Yeah, and even today, we talked about that in the first half hour of this segment. Experts are just all over the internet about the paranormal. But today...
Everyone's an expert about the Amityville Horror. All kinds of people later and all kinds of people that weren't there, that didn't experience things themselves personally, but they're experts. You know,
right.
That's always an interesting thing.
Well, and that happens. I mean, that happens to everybody in almost every case. But what I'm wondering is that I think that the people that you put together, the people that... And of course, you were... probably in a frantic state, like there's got to be someone on the planet who can come here and fix this, someone's got to fix this, and how do you get them, who is it, because it's not like you look it up in the Yellow Pages. So what happens is it just seemed to me when we were talking last week that it had to have been some kind of synchronicity thing, that I would have to think that the right people came to you at that right time. Nowadays, and this is
something I absolutely believe that team was put together by the grace of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
For example, there's a photograph taken the day of the investigation in March of 1976 where of a very strong, real likeness of St. Pio, who at the time was Padre Pio. He was a Capuchin priest that had all five wounds of Christ and openly bled for 50 years and 3 days. And he, actually, a cup of blood is what he bled every day for 50 years and 3 days.
Wow.
And his likeness is there, and it shows up in a photograph that at the time, Lorraine Warren is praying to him, asking him to come there. And... Father Ray, the priest that came to bless the house for us and helped us so much for so long afterwards, he had in his prayers mentioned our plight, if you will, to the Padre Pio. So synchronicity is a very interesting thing. It's one of those things that you don't really understand who all is involved or gets involved or looks in on different things at different times just because you ask them to. And that was just one little... I mean, that's just one picture taken there, and it's just one of literally hundreds of pictures taken that day.
So what's interesting is even though all this was going on, everything was just absolutely chaotic and mayhem, and you want help, you want to clean this house of whatever's going on, and then get back there, you know, get back in it. It really required that, I think, that team and that, you know, that situation. Had it happened today, you know, if that kind of thing were happening today, for example, in modern times, and we touched on this last time, there would be no end of people that you could call on. You just put a post on a bulletin board on the internet, and suddenly you'd have 300 people at your door, we want to help. Whereas then, I imagine you were just calling everywhere. Is there anything you can do for us? Is there anything you can do for us?
The problem with that is exploitation. There are so many people looking to make a name off of a case, and so willing to pump up their own credentials that don't mm-hmm. exist in some manner or another and associate themselves into something and make a name for themselves that way, that you really are besieged with charlatans.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very difficult process to find the people that are interested in helping you personally, mm-hmm. that are interested in your well-being and not in their own gain in some manner. And it's a very difficult task to cull through that when everything else is going on as well. There is no clearinghouse for this stuff. There is no national testing for it or licenses issued or anything like that. And you really have to trust your gut, and you have to trust the people that you do trust to give you good advice. In our case, we were so fortunate to have Father Ray's influence
mm-hmm.
in helping us decide who should and should not be invited to that investigation. Ed Warren is a demonologist. Lorraine Warren is a light transmedium. Mary Downey is a renowned time walker, had her own school
mm-hmm.
for psychic and her own radio shows at the time.
Mm-hmm.
These three people, individually particularly, had such strong Catholic faith that was synergistic with Father Ray.
Mm-hmm.
I was not a Catholic, but I could see that their faith got them through this in different ways that was so important to surviving this.
Did you ever get to study other things that the Warrens had done, for example? Because I imagine...
I've spent time with the Warrens. I've been in their house a number of times. I've slept there.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent time in their museum. Ed walked off and left me there for quite a while one day. Just, I think, to see my reaction to being left alone in his dark little museum.
Oh, yeah.
With all his terrible things.
But you didn't know any of that stuff even existed prior to seeking out
their work, their body of work prior to that? No. No, I had no idea of who these people were or what they did.
Yeah, I have to say something intervened and got Hans Holzer onto some other case and got them involved in your case. That's all I can think. That's all I can think. And I have to say, I think that they were the right people. The Father Ray, I think everybody was the right person for you at the time. Yeah,
we didn't have a parish priest. He was an ecclesiastical judge for the diocese.
Ah.
This wasn't a parish priest that
right.
came out. This was someone who spoke nine languages.
Right.
This was the equivalent of, had the equivalent of a law degree from Oxford. After his name was the initials STL,
mm-hmm.
which is a doctorate of law, canon law. And he was a judge for that diocese. This I had met him because being invited to the diocese as a witness for the proceedings involving an annulment for my first marriage, which lasted about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And she had, my first wife had gone and applied for an annulment, and part of the rules is you invite the ex-spouse.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand that at all, but he and I became friendly isn't close enough to accurate. We became friends.
Mm-hmm.
Even in that short afternoon. And I certainly was willing to spend more time with him where before going to the diocese that day, I, you know, could have cared less about spending time with a priest.
Well,
an extraordinary man. And yes, he was the right man to be involved in this.
Yeah. I think the makeup of that team is just phenomenal, and the way it all sort of fell together. I just, even that seems like things were working for you behind the scenes. Like, there's nothing, again, it's got to be frustrating. You know, you're in this house, you love this house, you're paying for this house, it costs a lot of money, and you want to stay in this house, and all these whacked out things are happening, so you're basically evicted from this house, and you need help to get, you know, clean it up and get back in there. And yet you feel like you had said earlier, powerless. Because we're just human.
Excuse me, I still got some cough left.
Mm-hmm. Because we're just humans. So what can we do? It's not like we can wander through and you know, we don't have like they have on Sci-Fi Channel where you can hold out the palms of your hand and blast any entities away with a light beam. It doesn't happen. You know, it happens on TV, but it doesn't happen in real life. And so we can only do what, you know, we can only work through the powers that can work for us. And I think that team that was just... I think it was put together not by, you know, pure chance, let's just say.
I do agree.
Yes. The interesting... Oh, I want to get back onto the upcoming movie, because I know a lot of people are talking about that, but you know what? Let's
There's a movie coming out.
I heard. Let's take a break. Let's take a quick break.
Quick one?
Sure.
Yeah, just a very fast one, Will. Whatever the shortest one is you have.
Okay.
We're going to take that, and then we're going to come back and talk about that, because I know there were a lot of questions raised, and it just blew me away what was happening to you legally now. I mean, George, it's so complicated. So let's try and get through that, and we'll get 40 minutes or so, or 35 or 40 minutes of that, and because I want to try and understand this and find out why I want to discern, and I have a feeling none of us will know. You know, it's just like this is just what happens in business, but we'll find out more from your point of view, and I'll let you know what kinds of things I've received in my email. We'll do that after this break. So hang on,
George.
How
long is the break?
It'll just be like 3 minutes. Is that cool?
Okay.
Wait, you got a 252. 3 minutes. So we'll do that. We'll come right back. Okay? Excellent.
www.doortoatlantis.com, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Listen to W Paranormal Talk Radio Sunday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on the Pioneer Radio Network. For show information, visit WParanormal.com.
Ghost Hunting, My Ethereal Anti-Drug.
This is Pat Fitzhugh of the Bellwitch website, www.bellwitch.org, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
You're all going to die down here.
Will's bringing us back in. Oh, that's excellent.
Well, you weren't paying attention.
No. As a matter of fact, what I'm doing... Well, first of all, I have to say, this is indeed Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And we have on the phone George Lutz of the Amityville Horror and AmityvilleHorror.com. What I'm doing right now, why I wasn't paying attention, is because I was going to go to IMDb.org, because I have not done this yet. And I want to see what they say. Can you hear me typing that? Except for I did that wrong. And, yeah, I do have some computer skills, but I want to see, I want to talk about this, because this we mentioned, but we...
You want to talk about your computer skills?
Yeah, I want to talk about my computer skills.
Okay.
I want to talk about what I'm looking up right now, because anybody on the planet can do this. I'm going to IMDb.org, and I'm typing in Amityville Horror.
Well, while you're doing that, I know we talked about this during the break, George, but there was a question from a couple of the people in the chat room was asking if you knew if Father Ray was still alive or not.
Oh, okay. Well, I personally don't know. I am not sure that what's being said isn't. When people are being told that he is and that he has passed away, I'm not sure that that isn't to protect his privacy in some manner if he still is alive. I really don't know.
Well, how old was he back when you guys were doing this back in the late 70s?
I believe he was in his mid 40s.
Oh, so he's getting pretty up there then. Maybe what?
Well, my best friend Craig, his grandmother passed away. She was 92, so
right.
So people have unpredictable life.
Yeah, he'd probably be in his mid-70s.
So my granddad was 94, and he died right after we moved out of the house.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man, that's a long-lived family. My great-aunt was 98.
I got to see my great-grandparents, and they were all in their 90s on my father's
side. So it's completely unpredictable. Hopefully Father Ray is...
doing well.
Enjoying his privacy for a change.
Yeah. Wherever he is, I'm sure he's fine.
Yes. What I did is I went to, I did something anybody on the planet can do, anybody on the planet with internet, they can go to IMDb.org, which is the Internet Movie Database, now owned by Amazon, and I typed in Amityville Horror in the little search, and I clicked on Go. And here's what I find. The Amityville Horror 1979, okay? Now, that particular movie, George, I don't know what you think of it yet exactly. I don't have a grasp on it, but I do know that that particular movie was one of the few that changed my life. At the time, I was
I was born that year.
You were born that year?
Yeah.
I was 12 or 13, so of course my chance to see it was not at the movies. I would have seen that particular movie, you know, later in, you know, like within a year probably, but it usually like a sleepover kind of thing where you're trying to get scared and stuff like that. And so what happens is this particular movie, though, totally changed my life because I was already, you know, leaning toward being into paranormal stuff, and then there was this movie with just absolutely everything going on in it. Of course, you know, we took it as Hollywood, you know. When that movie came out, what did you think, George? Because you were the one who was the subject of it.
I thought a lot of different things. I was, personally, I was quite resentful that we hadn't been consulted with about the content and making of it. I did go out and do publicity for it under an agreement that I made with them that they would delete certain things that they had put in that hopefully will never be seen.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a negotiation thing. As a work, it is considered a classic, and compared to the remake that's being done now, I guess I would have to term it quite accurate compared to the movie that they've just done.
Well, that, and as a matter of fact, that's number two.
And
number two.
And don't misunderstand, the original is not accurate compared to the book. The book is much more accurate.
Now, you worked with the book, you know, the author of the book, right?
Yes, we gave him cassette tapes that Kathy and I had done for self-help, a series of about 24, 26 of them, and he had to work from them. Kathy wasn't going to sit down and be interviewed about this at the time. And so this was a process, and it was a very difficult task for him to unravel what had been done just for ourselves and put it in some kind of timeline and make sense of it. And fortunately, he did have access to Father Ray, and he did have access to the Warrens, and he was able to put together what he did.
The and that was Jay?
Yes, Jay Anson.
Mm-hmm. And what happens is, I just clicked on the one for 2005, the Amityville Horror 2005. I clicked on that one. Directed by Andrew Douglas. That's what they say. They say Jay Anson.
Who I'm sure is a very nice man.
Mm-hmm. They say Jay Anson did the novel. Sandor Stern did an earlier screenplay.
Yes, he was a dentist in California. Anson did the first screenplay for the first movie. They rejected it and turned to Sandor Stern to do that screenplay.
And then they also list Scott Kosar as a screenplay writer.
He evidently is listed as a writer on the current remake.
Right. They say that Ryan Reynolds is portraying George Lutz.
Well, if they want to say that they have a depiction of George Lutz, that's a really loose statement. From what I've learned of the content of this movie, saying it... that it bears some resemblance to us. I guess, you know, you could say that it takes place in a house and that there's phenomena that takes place and that there are three kids and newlyweds and it's on the water and these people have a boat and a telephone. But other than that, it's a real stretch to say it has any relationship to my family or what we experienced.
Well, I don't know, George, because I read on and it says Melissa George is the actress portraying Kathy Lutz.
Right.
And then Philip Baker Hall is portraying Father McNamara. We've got Jimmy Bennett portraying Michael Lutz. We have Jesse James portraying Billy Lutz. And we have Chloe Mortez as Chelsea Lutz.
Okay.
Sounds like your family. they didn't make it up. I'm appalled is what I am.
Well,
I'm appalled at this because I'm talking with George Lutz.
You have to look at this as an assault on a true story. This is an assault on my family, this movie. On the true story of it and the 30 years of answering questions about it. The 30 years of never wavering from the truth about this and...
The polygraph test. The history's mysteries. The
hundreds of
ABC, yeah.
And not involving us. And these people went out and created a script that is so far and away from any relation to the original book, any relation to the original movie.
How did...
They have created a whole new story. And it is a complete work of fiction.
How can Ryan Reynolds, Melissa George, Jimmy Bennett, Jesse James, Chloe Mortez, how can they portray these very real the names of these people that they're portraying are very real. How can they portray these real people without having studied with you?
What's more interesting is the statements these people make. The Andrew Douglas, the director, and Melissa George and Ryan Reynolds have made statements about how accurate this movie is, how it's going to be so much more accurate than the original, that the original needed to be remade, that this is going to be very accurate. They've gone back to the book, they say, at times. I'd like to know what book they read. They have got me trying to kill the children and Kathy three or four times in this movie.
Oh, my God.
They have me shooting a shotgun at them and hitting a blender. They have me trying to drown Kathy in the boathouse, trying to kill her with an outboard motor prop, running
talent.
The outboard motor. They have one of the kids up on the roof of the house. They have the kids and Kathy escaping from the house, escaping from me, in a rainstorm onto the roof. They have one of the kids trying to hit me with a TV antenna pipe. I don't know how to begin to describe to you how far they have strayed and how often and how much, and with complete disregard for the truth of the story, for the effect that this is going to have on the truth, on my family. This is going to create so much confusion and so much damage to what has been so hard fought and so much a source of misery at times for so long.
Well,
this is done with complete disregard.
Let me
the effect.
Let me add to that.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead. I agree with you. I can't believe that they're doing this, but I want to add.
Well, they bring the priest in. For example, Father Ray came the day that we moved into the house to bless the house. They bring the priest into this in the middle of the story, in the middle of the movie, and he is the priest that. He doesn't come to bless the house. What he comes, he ends up looking in an air duct. He comes as a visit to the children because, according to this movie, their father, their birth father, real father, died, and Kathy's a widow. Absolutely untrue. I mean, make it up as you go stuff. They can't even decide what to call him. They call him, first they call him Father Calloway, and then they call him Father McNamara.
Wow. Well, they do. Let me add to that just a little bit, because I think the first part of this might be actually accurate. It's the second part that's going a little crazy. On November 14th, 1974, police received a frantic phone call that led them to the DeFeo residence, where they made a grisly discovery. 6 bodies, the entire DeFeo family, all slaughtered with a .35 caliber as they slept calmly in their beds. Ronald DeFeo confessed to methodically murdering his parents and 4 siblings and claimed it was the voices that told him to do it. Now, that part sounds like what we all can agree on. Right? I mean, that sounds normal. It's not a normal thing. It's scary. But then, 1 year later, on December 18th, 1975, George and Kathy Lutz, along with their 3 children, moved into the house, thinking it was going to be their dream home, especially if their dreams were nightmares. Here's where we get into the... that sounds like market speak to me. The Lutz family only lasted 28 days in their home after they were terrorized by a demonic force that drove them away. Based on the true story of George and Kathy Lutz, the Amityville Horror remains one of the most horrifying haunted house stories ever told, because it actually happened.
Is what they're saying about the new movie?
Right. That's the
summary that was written.
That's the summary on IMDb, which is supposed to be IMDb has always been, since its inception and before, when it was conceived, and that was way back before Amazon.com bought it, IMDb was supposed to remain neutral in all cases.
Sure.
And I think it does to the most part, and
well,
they do allow comments.
Press, what you're talking about is press release stuff.
Yeah, that's very
what
press
this movie
release.
Starts off with is the Kathy and I and the children living in a small house in Deer Park, New York. The correct way to have said this is that we each had a house. We sold those homes for more than we bought this house for. That the home we were living in was mine because we had sold Kathy's first.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 5-bedroom, 3, you know, basement and 2-story house.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a small house. It was just we were looking for something on the water. We didn't have to travel to our boat and have it in a yard of some kind, in a marina. And when we added it up just financially, monthly, by selling the 2 homes and taking the boat out of the marina and putting it on our own boathouse, which the Amityville house had, we were actually ahead money-wise.
Oh, yeah.
Monthly.
That would save a lot of money because marinas are... Yeah.
We were in great shape moving in there.
I'm here in Michigan, Great Lakes State. A lot of people I know are boat owners, and it costs a lot to have it in a
But you won't get any of that kind of information from this movie.
Of course.
Instead, what you'll see is that you'll see a scene in the basement where I have been, George Lutz in their movie, has been constructing coffins for Kathy and the children.
What? Oh, my. There's no way.
And loading a shotgun. You'll see a scene where I'm screaming at Kathy to kill me.
Yeah, you now have me speechless. The only thing I can say is that I'm speechless because none of this resembles anything in the book.
No, it does not.
And it doesn't resemble anything. I've seen a lot of specials, you know, the history specials. I've seen interviews with you. I've heard interviews with you on Lou Gentili. None of that ever. Where did they come up with this?
Well, we now know, you know, from this content and from what we know now, we now know why they did not want to involve me or my family in the remake.
Because
this is what they intended to do. They could not have, in my opinion, and I'm sure so many people will agree with this when they see this, they could not have worked harder at destroying a true story about real people and real events. They couldn't have worked harder to do that.
Let me play devil's advocate real quick.
Sure.
For me, I'm actually sort of an average person, and I have a job, and I enjoy sometimes seeing movies. I don't see very many. I'm not like a movie hound, and I don't collect DVDs or VCR tapes. I just enjoy Hollywood to an extent. I love seeing sci-fi as my particular thing. But of course, I'm also interested in the paranormal. I usually don't go see horror movies. Of course, though, the Amityville Horror is a classic. So that one, you know, I saw a long time ago and every so often get to see again. But I would see this movie coming out and I would think, wow, you know, they're gonna redo it. They're gonna put in all kinds of cool special effects. It's gonna be, you know, it's gonna be an interesting story. It's a remake of an absolute classic. I would be interested in going to see this movie. And, you know, based on just press releases and watching people on Jay Leno or wherever they're going to send the cast to, you know, that kind of thing, and whatever press junkets they do, I'll hear about it and I'll be excited about it. I would like to see this movie, the Amityville Horror remake. I would love this movie as just a moviegoer, as an average guy, as somebody, you know, now, of course, I might not completely fit that characteristic because now I'm talking to the guy who went through the events that comprise that story, and I'm hearing a different story. But as a moviegoer, I would be excited about this remake. So I, you know, as when I'm at work.
Are you going to be excited that they have me murdering our family dog and that they've turned the family dog into a sheepdog rather than the black lab that he was?
I can't be excited about that, no.
Okay.
No, that I would say, oh, they totally ruined... When I left the movie, I would say, they totally ruined it, you know. But I would go see it.
Based you need to understand that Orion Pictures are the only people that could have done this remake properly.
Mm-hmm.
And they have... From what I understand, from what I have learned about this, that has not happened.
Why would
this story could have been told accurately and it could have been told properly, and no one cared to do that I can figure out.
Well, unfortunately, I have to say I would be as a person who hasn't, you know, before I talked with you on the phone. I would have been, and I still was until we talked to you, very excited about this movie. This is Amityville Horror is a classic. I would love to go see this movie. The only thing is, now that I know what's actually happening, I can't say that this movie is going to be any good. I think it's going to be a huge letdown, just exactly like White Noise was.
This will create tremendous problems. Ongoing problems for years. This is not something you just undo overnight and say, you know, well, here's the list of what's not right with it. That just doesn't fix it. Millions of people will see this.
And, of course, being by, you know, a huge media conglomerate, It's going to be, you know, running worldwide, probably subtitled.
Well, they went so far as, you know, my daughter Missy had a, I don't know how to word this, a friend there, Jody, someone that told mm-hmm. her that she was going to live there forever and mm-hmm. actually followed us out to California. We had a really very hard time getting Jody to go away, and the only way to do that was having Missy demand that it happen, and that was a very difficult event.
Mm-hmm.
Jody was a little boy. There's a picture of him appearing in the house the day of the investigation. Now, they've turned Jody into a girl.
Probably because Jody is, I mean, with Jodie Foster is so famous, she's a girl. You know, you probably just, when you're sitting in...
Any excuse will do.
When you're locked in, when you're locked in a room and you're writing this what we now know is fiction, I don't know. They say it's based on a true case. They say it's based on what really happened to you guys. But it doesn't sound like
saying
it even...
it, don't make it so.
They use your names in the movie.
No way around that. Orion Pictures has the right to do that. We take issue with the fact that MGM, as far as we're concerned, does not have the right to do this.
The actors and actresses who portray your family, or the family who's remarkably similar to you, but obviously cannot be you, that use your name.
It gets
they
better.
Didn't
they
talk
have us
to
escaping,
you.
They have us escaping from this in the end, in the boat.
Oh, well, that's different even from the first movie.
Oh, yeah, that's... You want to talk about writers locking themselves in a room, you know.
Did they not have a copy of the book?
That's a really good question, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, they could have gone to the library and got a copy of your book. They could have downloaded it probably off of the Internet. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
On AmityvilleHorror.com, there is a section there called Remake.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, some things that we've put up. And we put up that section that I talked about last week about the what our agreement with, what the definition is of a remake, of the remake about this. And basically what it says is, which shall depict the same characters participating in the same or substantially same events as shall have been depicted in either the first theatrical motion picture or the first made-for-television feature motion picture, as the case may be. That has not happened here. I personally consider this an assault on my family and a real intentional breach of our agreement with these people.
Why?
You understand the contract is passed down to different hands, but the contract still lives. It doesn't go away. They had a right to make a remake when we originally did the agreement with American International Pictures. They had no sequel rights. We retained the sequel rights, but the remake was defined as same characters participating in the same or substantially same events.
Why do they think they can do this with your story? Who owns the story, your story of Amityville Horror?
Who owns the story?
Yeah. Jay or you or somebody. Because, like, for example, when...
You mean for the copyright for the original book?
Right. That would be, what,
that's
Jay?
Kathy and myself and Jay Anson.
How come Jay is listed on the credits and you're not?
He's the author. We are the copyright holders together, all three of us.
Ah, okay, so he's just the name on the cover, so he's the one who gets listed in the credits.
Right.
Did they ask him if they could do
that?
He
died in 1980.
Did they ask his family? Do you know his family?
No, I don't.
Hmm. So
that wouldn't make, you need to understand, that wouldn't make any difference, asking him if they could make these changes. He had no control over that.
Well, oh, that's true. Who?
His family would have no control over that.
Who got money? Who got money to do this remake?
Michael Bay's production company, and MGM, I think, is expecting to participate in that, and Miramax Films.
Now, when Private Lynch had that experience in the war, just last, you know, it, she had been captured and tortured or whatever, and then rescued, mm-hmm. and then come back here to the United States to great celebration and stuff. She had a story, right? A patriotic, wonderful, but horrific at the same time story. And she's the owner of that story. And she contracted with a ghostwriter to write the book, right? And she can contract with whomever to for the movie rights and stuff like that.
Sure.
But it sounds like you have the movie rights for Amityville.
I have a sequel. You have a difference here. I have the sequel rights.
Oh,
the
okay.
Original, the rights for the 28 days that are depicted in the book were sold to American International Pictures.
Okay.
When they sold their company to Filmways, and then Filmways went bankrupt and sold their rights to Orion Pictures, the rights to tell the story,
okay,
were handed down to Orion Pictures. Orion Pictures at that point had the right to do a remake,
mm-hmm.
but not any sequel.
Why isn't Orion Pictures doing this movie?
Well, that's a really good question. That's, I guess, a legal question. And
because, you know what?
They're a subsidiary of some kind of MGM's. They're affiliated with MGM, but they exist as a separate company. MGM bought the film library.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rights for the original movie, the right to sell the DVDs and the VHS stuff and all that, I believe that, from what I understand, is MGM's. But the remake rights remain property of Orion because there has never been a transfer in writing of the copyright.
I think, well, both companies are capable and have a lot of resources, you know, Orion and MGM. And
well, they're affiliated.
And they're even well, I imagine a lot of Hollywood is affiliated with each other at some points. But you've got to figure, though, I would think that why wouldn't they just have Orion do the movie? Then they could call you up and say, you know, George, we want to do this. We want to do it right. We want it to be spectacular. We want it to be something befitting the something that I would want to see. I'm Doug. I'm, you know, a little interested in the paranormal. I'm a lot, you know. But I'm Doug. I'm average Doug. I've got a job. I absolutely loved the Amityville Horror, the original one. I would love to see this remake. I would absolutely love to see it. I'm a moviegoer, right? Why wouldn't they do it right? Because I would love to see one.
I don't have the dates in front of me. What they did is they called me last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we want to bring you over, we want to get together with you, we want to talk about this, we're going to be doing the remake. And I said, great, when do you want to do that? And they said, well, we have a scheduling problem, and we'll get back to you.
That was it.
What they were telling people before that phone call was that they couldn't get a hold of me. So I called them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I called them back again, and, oh, yeah, we still have a scheduling problem, we want to bring you over. And this went on for, I think, 4 months.
Well, they seem to be able to schedule all of these people to do all these things because it's marked here as being completed.
Well, you understand the expression shined on.
Right.
What was happening at that point was they were writing a script and they were supposedly waiting for that to get done before discussing this with me. And whatever. Any excuse will do.
Then they probably read the script and said, oh, my goodness.
Well, what happened was my last conversation with them, when something like, I'm really sorry that you guys keep putting this off and that we don't seem to be getting anywhere with this. I have some issues that I had thought we could sit down and discuss, but I guess I'll have to take them to MGM, since they're the ones that announced that they're doing this. And the reaction was, you have issues? And I said, yes, I've had them for quite a long time. I've written to you people. You just evidently don't read your mail or whatever, but we'll do what we have to do. So we sent the letter out again of inquiry about, you know, how come you guys think you can do this? Where do the rights come from that you can do what you're doing? And so that was, by then that was May or so, and in June of last year they sued me.
out of the blue? That's insane.
Well, there was never a discussion. There was never anybody at MGM that picked up the phone and said, you know, I guess we should talk with you guys.
So, because you can go ahead and anybody can sue anybody here in the United States for any reason, they thought, okay, we're just gonna like totally tie it up in courts, and it's gonna be an issue that's tied up in legal system, and then we're just gonna continue on doing what we're doing because we don't have a restriction against doing it now.
What I learned later was that by then they had formed what I think I have learned, maybe I should word it that way, because we'll find out more of this as time goes on, but they formed a shell company to hide mm-hmm. the copyright of the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
And they filed this under something called Long Island Properties or something like that. And so they didn't even use a working title for the screenplay and call it Amityville Horror or Amityville Remake or anything like that. They just did everything they possibly could to secret this and the content of what they were doing. And I guess they thought they could get this done and make their money and, let the chips fall where they may.
It sounds like they tried to sue you before you could sue them.
I never wanted to sue them. I wanted to talk with these people and figure out a way to do this as accurately as possible.
Right, but in their minds, they're probably thinking, oh my God, George is going to sue us. We better sue him first so that, it looks good in court for them.
And that's happened. I mean, that's happened in business before. Big, big business. And this sucks because it's a movie, George. We only have 3 minutes left. I hate this. but it's a movie that I would like to see made. A remake.
Well, give you three examples of what they've done with movies in Hollywood. And Hollywood's really capable of doing some great stuff. They just did Flight of the Phoenix, a remake, and they did it incredibly accurately, real true to the first one and to the original story. It's a great movie. And if you enjoyed the first movie, going to see Flight of the Phoenix, it was kind of like seeing an updated version, but it was a really great movie.
Mm-hmm.
They did Stepford Wives, which is a, Stepford Wives alternate universe in the sense that it was a completely different movie from the first. And Forrest Gump, if you ever read the original book, Forrest Gump?
No, I wish I had.
Forrest Gump, the original book, is a wonderful book. It's incredible. And the movie is a completely different story, and the movie's wonderful all on its own. But it's not Forrest Gump the book. It's Forrest Gump the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a completely different adaptation, real change of story and all that. It's like, if you just read the book and then went to see the movie, you say, what am I looking at? It's another great movie, but
it's completely different, yeah.
Yeah. So they, they do a number of different things. What they've done here is they did Amityville Horror, alternate universe, somebody's drug dream. I have no idea what they did. I don't know how to accurately describe this. You can search all day for ways to talk about it, but it's a shameful thing to do.
What's your suggestion then? You don't want to see people go see this movie and pay their $7 to $10, obviously.
People have to make up their own minds. All I can do is explain to you
that this is fancy. This or flights of fancy.
This has nothing.
This has nothing to do with what actually happened. Kind of sad because George, I would love to see the Amityville Horror remade from the book and from your experiences with your input and done in modern. With modern technology, done really well, really wow me for that hour and a half to 2 hours, whatever it takes to tell the story. And I would love to see that. And I would pay $7 to $10 to go see that because it's something that I would love to see. This, though, sounds like it might be not exactly what I expect or would have expected. And that kind of, that saddens me a lot because I would have liked to have seen a modern remake of it, done really well. But I don't know. It's kind of sad. I am appalled that they're doing this to you. We have 1 minute left.
You need to understand, they're not just doing it to me. They're doing it to everyone that has an interest in paranormal, that has an interest in learning, that's interested in the story, has been a follower of it for years. They're doing this to everyone. This is, it's everyone that gets hurt by this. It's not just me and my family.
I agree. I'm appalled and shocked, and I can't. I'm I'm sad that it has happened to you, and that around the Amityville Horror too, because that was, like I said earlier, one of the things that turned me on my ear. You know, I was young, impressionable, and that helped me, you know, guide the rest of my life. You know, otherwise, why would I be doing a show called Ghostly Talk, right?
Okay.
It helped me get into the paranormal, and this is just pretty sad, actually. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Will you come on, like, around the time that the movie starts?
And I'd be glad to. I think we were talking possibly about the 17th.
I would love to do that, because that would be just after the premiere, right?
Okay. Right.
So I think, you know, they would premiere, like, on Friday or whatever, and then we can talk about it on Sunday if that works out for you. I would love to talk about it once it's actually out, and we can, well, we can either nitpick or we can just talk about it in general, whichever comes, you know, becomes the, you know, what happens during the conversation. But I just think that, I don't know, it's just scary, and I'm appalled. But I'm so, so incredibly grateful that it brought us together. Because I got to talk with George Lutz for this past hour and a half, plus I got to talk to you last week as well, and again coming up in April. So, you know, the things work in mysterious ways, and I have to say I'm grateful that you came on Ghostly Talk.
Thank you.
Thank you very, very much.
Will and Doug, thank you both. Really.
Thank you. I so much appreciate it, George. And keep in touch. Keep in touch.
I'll see you guys next month.
And I'll talk with you next month. And that all, of course, can be set up through Scott L., because he's the telephone master of the group.
Okay.
He wasn't here today because he had to go to the... he had family business, so...
Okay, yeah. I'll take care of this one.
Okay, excellent.
His dad needed him.
Yep. So he's out doing family business, and so that was that. But I am so glad I got to speak with you. Thank you so much, George.
Thanks for having me on.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Bye. So that was... why don't I hear me?
I hear you.
Oh, good. So that was George Lutz of Amityville Horror, amityvillehorror.com. And I, of course, have to close the show to make way for another exciting show on Pioneer Radio, W Paranormal. And our website is www.ghostlytalk.com. And Pioneer is pioneer.rolo, R-O-L-O.net. I'm looking forward to next week's show as well.
Definitely.
And hopefully we'll have more of the gang here for a little friendly banter back and forth. Today was a pretty heavy show. It was,
yeah.
And I...
Well, next week's the party.
Oh, that's right. Next week's the party. So everybody will be there. So
everybody
tune in on Saturday
live band,
night.
Live band. It's,
live
it's official.
Band. Saturday night. This upcoming Saturday. Tune in, because we will be broadcasting live. And from the annual Ghostly Talk anniversary party. So with that, I have to say, this has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And stay tuned for W Paranormal following next on Pioneer Radio. Science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.